Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Welcome to Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschooled.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
It's time to document the journey.
Welcome back to Homeschool Podcast. I hope you guys had a great 4th of July long weekend. I had an interesting one, but it was fun. I had a great long weekend, but I missed you guys, and I'm glad you're back here. Thanks for tuning in to Homeschool Podcast and supporting, as always. Quick reminder, shows I have coming up, July 14th, I'm in Portland, Oregon, and then the very next day, July 15th, I'm in Seattle. So you guys can get tickets to either or both if you're a diehard fan, right? I mean, it's not a far drive. I'm doing it. It's at homeschooledpod.com. Click on tour. And then after that, I'll be going to Worcester, Massachusetts. That's in August 14th in Worcester, Massachusetts. And then I will be in Maui, Hawaii, September 20th. Okay, you guys, so you guys got a lot of options to catch me live, and I'm working on tour dates right now to go to Lincoln and Omaha, Nebraska, so that's going to be in October. So things are coming up, but make sure you guys get tickets at homeschoolpod.com, click on tour, and then while you're there, make sure you click on merch and pick up some t-shirts, like the new one I just dropped today. It's got the Only Love Can Save the World on the front, which is the name of my tour this year, and on the back, it's got all the tour dates. So if you were already at a show or you're going to be at an upcoming show, it's a pretty cool souvenir to have. I want to welcome to the show. Welcome back, Daniel DeSangre. What's up, dude?
Hey, dude. I could tell your entire fan base has just been clamoring for me to come back on.
Yeah, dude.
I'm sure you got dozens of replies.
They're diehards, bro. They're driving from they're driving from Portland to Seattle to see me. So
No. Seriously, man. Yeah. I respect it. But thanks for having me again.
Yeah, dude. How was your fourth?
It was good, man. Yeah, it was good. So, like, you know, we went to the beach Saturday. I got burned a little bit. I don't know if you can tell, but got a little burned.
No, you look good.
Sunday we did a little bit of barbecuing and stuff. So we did good, man. We tried to stay local.
I did a lot of barbecuing on Sunday. So
tell me about that story.
Okay, so let me tell you what really happened, because I'm sure all Kevin. Okay. So all you heard was like Kevin posting pictures and saying there was a fire at my house, right? Yeah, is that pretty much all you've heard? Okay, so
that and firefighters.
Yeah, so I'm barbecuing in my backyard. You've seen my backyard patio area, right?
Yeah.
And then you know, so it's got my house, and then there's like a courtyard, and then all the garages where my podcast studio here is. So the podcast studio right here, like right there, is the alley, and then next to me is the dumpster for the entire building. So I'm sitting there, like, I think Jen was upstairs, like, bringing some food to bring down for me to grill. And I'm just sitting there grilling and stuff. And I was with my mom and dad and Kevin. And we're just sitting out back, you know, having some drinks. All of a sudden, I hear, like crackling, dude. I almost thought, like, who the hell's – I go, are they doing fireworks right here? And I went out – I walked out to the alley where my dumpster is, and the whole dumpster was on fire, dude. Like, I don't mean, like – a dumpster fire. I mean, like, dude, the flames are as high as the building. Like, the flame is going up the wall of the side of my garage. My podcast studio is about to be burned down. And I'm like, oh, shit, we got a fire back here. And I ran and I grabbed a bunch of fire extinguishers, which I have, like, around the building. So I grabbed one and I'm like, and nothing's happening. And Kevin's like, you gotta take the pin out, you idiot. So, so I give the fire extinguisher to Kevin, and he takes the pin out. And then while he does that, I run to go get more fire extinguishers. And so Kevin's basically maintaining the fire pretty good, to where my house didn't burn down. Okay, and then the firefighters came and then completely put it out. They had to, like, check my whole, like, podcast studio here to make sure that, like, it wasn't still in the walls, because the walls were still hot. I don't have any pictures of the actual fire, but it was scary, bro. I was just like, dude, me, my wife, my mom, my dad are about to all be homeless. Like in the same day. Because, you know, my parents live in the front building, yeah. You know? And it's like, dude, it was pretty scary. But that's the story. I was like telling the firefighters everything because I still had the barbecue going. I'm like, this is the barbecue. Yeah. This is the supplies I'm using for the barbecue. None of it has been back there, and I have not thrown anything in that dumpster from this barbecue. Like, I did not start this fire, right? And everyone's like, yeah, confirmed. Like, we're, because me and Kevin had cigars, which, like, we're not, we don't, you know, we don't smoke cigars every day, but I was like, it's 4th of July. I'll get one.
Yeah.
And we're smoking cigars, and I'm like, okay. I bought three cigars. I have receipts. There's three cigar butts on the floor right there. I'm like, we did not throw any cigars in there. So my theory is that because like 5 minutes before, I heard this car like an obnoxiously revving the engine. It could even have been a motorcycle, like a Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift car. You know the sound when you hear it. And so 5 minutes before that, I heard that, like, who the fuck just, like, went taking off in the alley? So my theory is maybe some kids or somebody was, you know, maybe they threw a firework in there or a cigarette or something. I don't know, dude. Arsonist.
Especially around that, dude. They might have been so inspired by the new Fantastic, what was it, Fast and the Furious movie that just came out. So,
yeah.
Fire, bro. That's all it was. Yeah.
That movie was fire, bro. You're good. You thinking what I'm thinking?
Let's just burn every fucking house down.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my 4th of July, which you know, it was good. It was scary, and but you know, everybody was safe. We got the fire out, thank God, and we continued to barbecue, and the food was delicious.
Nice. That's what I was gonna say. Did you burn the meat because you were waiting to put out the fire?
No. I did burn some peppers, but besides that. Everything turned out pretty good.
Recreating Backdraft, man. You guys are recreating Backdraft out there.
Yeah, dude. So let's talk about your movie that just came out. It dropped only a couple days ago.
Yeah, dude. It dropped July 1st. The movie's called You're Hired. It's available on iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, and Vudu.
Tell me what it's about.
All right, cool. So it's an office comedy that pits a young black man versus a white guy, right? And they're both vying for a job promotion. They're both led to believe that because of their race, the other one's going to get the job. So white privilege, black reparations. So they start to sabotage each other for the job promotion. So basically what it is, it's like a social satire. We avoid the political correctness. So instead of trying to be so PC about everything, we're just focusing more on the struggles of race and identity. We're basically poking fun of it. So office comedy, we don't take it too seriously. A lot of witty, but a lot of slapstick comedy in it. So
that's a good that's a good idea for a story. That's a good premise because it actually allows you to be as PC as you want with both parties without catching any heat for it because each one thinks it's the other thing.
Exactly, man. So we kind of play into that. You know, we have like a nice big cast. So like it's independent, super independent project, but we had a pretty big cast for what we did. And, you know, we have Indians, we have Hispanics, we have Asians, like everybody's represented in this. So it kind of plays a little bit like race and identity.
Like
so.
Indian or like Native American?
Indian. Okay. Native American, they're a little hard to get. We've been out of our budget.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. They get free healthcare and shit. They ain't doing your movie.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Like, we don't provide free healthcare at independent sets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like.
I like in a movie about racial privilege, we're making Native Americans seem like the bad guy. Okay.
So you've seen it.
Yeah, man. No, I think that's great to give, you know, both sides of the story. And I don't want to sound like a broken record because I do kind of talk about this on my podcast a lot because, you know, I'm a big fan of movies and television. And I don't like how they try to – what's the word? Not filter, but they try to pretend like those things don't exist. And I don't think that necessarily helps the cause. You know, like, you know, your common ABC, NBC networks nowadays, you turn on TV and nothing really seems that realistic. It's just like you've painted this fairy tale land and they're like, well, we want to be very diverse. We don't want to have anyone that comes across as like the character is a racist. But it's like you need those characters so that the non-racists can shine. That's why like Archie Bunker and his son-in-law worked. It was both sides. And then like I mean every movie ever, you can't just take away every bad villain because then there would be no good movies, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes they'll even go the opposite where they go really preachy, right? And it's like, you're going to learn about this, and you're going to learn about this. You're going to feel the anguish that they're feeling. Ours is like, man, you got to be able to balance the two, mm-hmm. and you got to be able to just have fun. Like, we have to be able, in order to get past it, you have to understand it, but you also have to be able to laugh at it.
And you got to be able to either overcome something or destroy, good destroys evil. These are two things that a good show or movie needs. Like, either the racist character, you know, you're overcoming, you're showing somebody who was brought up a certain way and you're changing him to good. He's influenced by good. So he starts out as bad. Or you have just a straight up evil person that eventually gets defeated by good. Like, you need these two things for a good story. Like, you don't want Die Hard without the fucking bad guys. It's just a Christmas office party. That's all it ends up being.
Exactly. It ends in 10 minutes and I want my money back. Like,
yeah, dude. You need that. But what gave you guys this idea? I mean, obviously everything that's going on in the world, now that I know what it's about, I could see where you got the idea, but.
Yeah, absolutely. So me and my partner that I did this with, Ricky Teams, you know, he's black, I'm Latino. So we kind of told the viewpoint of people of minority, right? So we want to talk about the story. So even with this one, even though you have the two characters that are vying for this position, they start trying to screw each other over, right? So that's where you kind of get the comedic element. They're trying to screw each other out of the promotion. So, you know, we want to have fun with it. I mean, with everything being so serious about the subject, as it should be, right? But we have to get to a point where we can laugh again. And it seems like the last year and a half, everything has been so serious, man. Like depressing, right? Like, it's just, especially with COVID, especially with all of us locked in our houses, we're not getting that social interaction. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have just, like, it's been so front and center with everything. You know, it's like, sometimes we got to get a little bit of a comedy without just completely ignoring it altogether. Like you said, like, oh, it doesn't exist. You know, these are just minorities here on ABC with Blackish, and we're just not going to address it. Like, kind of have to address it a little bit, because, like, that's the state we're living in right now. But you have to be able to laugh about it so that we can kind of move on.
Absolutely, dude. I mean, you know, I'm a stand-up comic, and during the pandemic, mm-hmm. like most people, most artists, you know, you were told that you were non-essential, and you know, it was just a fact. You're just non-essential, which is just meaning that you're not important enough for us to risk. You know, there's certain occupations that it's important enough that we're willing to risk everything, and then there's some occupations that we're not. But like you said, dude, we were all in a dark time. Everyone, not just artists, but like especially artists, but everyone was at a dark time. And it's when the world needed us the most, for you to make a film, you know, for you to go out and see a live concert, whether it be stand-up or music or you know, this is stuff that gives people morale. This is stuff that, you know, I mean, I know a lot of comics that committed suicide during the pandemic, like a lot, dude. I mean, comics are already a push away. Yeah. You know what I mean? A lot of the guys I know, and then this, you killed them. And I fought with the city, dude. Like, I don't know if I ever told you this, but like the entire pandemic, I was going back and forth with the board of directors of Los Angeles at the point where they allowed us to have outdoor restaurants, but they would not allow us to have stand-up comedy shows outdoors. So it just didn't really make sense why you can have a group of people gathering to eat, but they can't watch someone while they're eating. And so I wrote a whole plan on how we can do it safely, and I called in, because you couldn't go in person anymore, but every person does have the right to go to these board meetings. Every Tuesday I was calling in, and you know, sometimes they wouldn't even let me talk. And when they did let me talk, they would, you know, they kind of shut it down really quick, and they wouldn't read my thing. And I have emails back and forth with the head of the supervisor of Los Angeles County, the head of the board. I have emails back and forth with her, and she's straight up saying, like, this is not important. Like, it's considered non-essential. She even drops Newsom's name. He's not allowing us to do live entertainment outside right now. We just feel that comedy shows and music shows, it causes people to linger. You know, and I have emails of me telling her, you know, I know a lot of people that are battling depression, and those numbers are higher than COVID numbers. And, you know, it literally is not doing anything by just keeping one person from standing 6 feet or 8 feet away from a group of people who are already sitting there eating. I mean, I've talked about this like 100 times on this podcast, but it's like ticketed shows are a way for us to keep track of how many people are in one place at one time, because it's a ticketed event. And you know, if you don't have a ticket, are you going to go down to the concert and stand outside? You're not. If you go online and you want to go to a concert and it says sold out, are you going to go outside? I mean, some people go and try to buy tickets on the street, but it's pretty rare. When you go out to a restaurant and if they don't have room for you, you're going to stand there in a group of people for 30 minutes and wait for someone to leave, and then you're going to take the table. So you've got several people eating at the same table in one day, as opposed to a ticketed event where, you know, we're only allowed to have 50 people. We've only sold 50 tickets. And then as soon as the show's over, they leave. And, you know, I've argued with this, and I've had her straight up say, well, Governor Newsom doesn't feel at this time. And that's their response to depression, you know. Sorry, you know, off on a little tangent there, but you...
it's totally fine, man, because especially during that time, like, I felt like comedy was really needed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, really, it was, like, exactly the reason that you said. And if these are comedians, think about the other just non-comedians. Like, I don't even know what the stats are, but, like, I'm sure there was a lot of suicide that happened, or a lot of people that kind of just swirled into depression, because we don't know how people are living their lives. We don't know who's living alone. Like, the whole lack of social interaction, you know, where a lot of people value themselves based on, you know, the friends and how they, you know, the hangups and all that stuff they do. It, like, this thing lasted like almost a year and a half, man. Yeah. Like, it really messes with your psyche. So, like,
I don't care who you are. The fact
that they did that was shitty. Yeah. Yeah.
It really was. And it just wasn't a good plan. Like, I was all for being safe. It's just, you guys were just kind of making it up as you went along, and certain things didn't make sense. So then we had to call bullshit on everything you said, you know? But, not just for comedians, but for filmmakers, like, you know, you couldn't go on a set anymore. Like, all production had to get stopped. And, you know, if you were a writer, if you make your living as a writer, all of a sudden your pocket just got a lot lighter as well. Like, anything in the entertainment industry was the top of the non-essential list. And that's you and me, bro. And sure, like, that's, they can't stop you from writing. If you got a great idea for a script like you did, you went and you wrote it. You and your partner went and you wrote it. I don't know if you did that during the pandemic or not. But the point is like, they couldn't keep you from creating. Like, I still wrote jokes. It's hard to not go and practice them, because you don't know what's dog shit unless you try them on a real crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, you, if you're a musician, you were probably able to play indoors with your band members and write music together still. But I've talked to a lot of musicians, and I know that they were still battling depression, even though they were still able to create. There was, it's like you said, dude, if it's, I don't care who you are, man, your psyche, it's you can't be in that long, and you can't, and you know what, one of the most important thing of being an artist is, yes, it's expressing your art, but it's expressing it to someone, and you can only write so many jokes or write so many scripts and write so many songs, and after a year of that and no one's heard them yet, you kind of go like, well, what the hell am I doing this for? You know?
It feels as if you're just writing like Dear Diary. Like, at that point, you're the only one reading it. And, you know, like for people like us, right? Like, we are creators. We're creating content, you know, to be out there for the masses. And if I can't get audience reactions, if I don't know how they're responding to that, whether it's positively or even negatively, like, I accept criticism, you know, that's how I'm going to get better. But if I can't assess myself, I feel like I'm just stuck on an island. And I'm sure that's how a lot of other people felt too. Like, people that don't necessarily do creatively, they feel like they're stuck on an island. And for people like us that are creatives, we're kind of emotional wrecks, right?
Yeah.
Like, our emotions are all over the place, because you're crazy enough to put yourself in somebody else's shoes to be able to write in somebody else's mind. Like, you have to be a little nuts, right? Like, so we're already crazy to begin with, man. And if we can't, you know, if we can't have that interaction, it just throws me off, man. Like, I can't do what I normally do.
Yeah, if you're not one of those people that is the creators, you're still on the island. You're just on a different island than the creators, because none of you are on the same island. It's like, you're the one that needs the entertainment to keep going. And you know, we're fortunate enough to still do podcasts, which is a lot of people. It keeps a lot of people going. You know, so mm-hmm. we were still able to reach people through the internet and stuff like that, but it's just not the same. You got to get out there, and the mentality of prisoned or locked in or stuck on an island, it's not good for the consumer or the creator at all. And, you know, man, it's kind of like capitalism in a way, because the things that came back first were always, mm-hmm. it's like if you had money and you were already a big empire, you had the monopoly on everything as it came back. Like the first things to open were like the big chain restaurants, and you know, the first movies to go back into production were not yours, bro. It wasn't yours.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was like, okay, Robert Pattinson Netflix. Playing Batman. All right, okay. Yeah. That's essential.
We'll allow it.
That's essential. But exactly. And your little script is not essential. Even though yours has way less people together on a set. You know what I mean? It's capitalism, bro. And then, like, you know, we had an Oscars this year. Like, how the hell did we have an Oscars? There was movies being made.
And it was so weird, man. Like, even the Oscars, I don't know if you watched it, but, like, it was such a weird...
It was a weird Oscars,
It was bro. So weird, dude. It felt like an island. Like, yeah. It was, like, barely anybody there. There was only, like the same 10 movies that even came out that year.
I know.
But the same ones just being nominated, dude. Like, this was, like... The worst amount of just there was nothing, man. Like, there was nothing to pull from. It was just, I don't know why they even had it, man.
There was a couple of good movies, to be honest with you. I really liked Sound of Metal. I thought Sound of Metal was really good. Yeah. And that one, I forget the name, but the one where the girl kind of goes crazy and she goes to, like, kill those guys that, that raped her friend. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And they also had Judas and the Black Messiah. That was a good one, too.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Yeah. I recently saw Father, which I don't really agree that he should have won Best Actor. I mean, he's Anthony Hopkins. He is an amazing actor, obviously. But for that performance, I was like, I could have seen it go to other people. But anyway, yeah, dude. they were making movies, and the first movies to come back were those ones where they had millions of dollars invested in it. And that means that it was essential, apparently. But
exactly, which is sort of a shame to us, right? Because, like, we're like those starving artists, right? Those independent people that usually that's where the better, more creative content comes from, right?
Totally.
Because we're not in a box, mm-hmm. but yet they want to give us more of the safe stuff that we're just going to eat up, and it's the consumer consumption. And all that.
Yeah, man. That's true. I mean, I'm happy for because there's so many employees on a major movie set. Like, there's little guys like us. Like, there's guys that, you know, key grips, they hold they put up the lights, they build the sets. They, you know, there's guys that are writers that they're still able. I'm glad that they were able to go back right away. I'm not saying I'm unhappy that it was, but it's just, it's funny that like the things that became important first. Did you write this during the pandemic or before?
So this one, we actually wrote a little bit of both. Okay, so we actually wrote it before we actually started principal. So we actually started doing, like, our production before it, and then we kind of had to halt it during the pandemic. So during that time, since everything was shut down, we had a little bit of time to kind of assess. We put together, like, our assembly cut, which is where you know, for the people that don't do film, what that is you kind of put together everything you shot, you kind of assemble a quick movie. You're not focusing too much on, like, the tight editing. You're sort of just kind of putting the movie together, saying, okay, are we missing anything? Is the main storyline, like, is it reading? Do we need to do anything about that? So that gave us time to do that. And then we realized we needed to do reshoots. So we had to write reshoot scenes, and then we had to film reshoot scenes all during the pandemic. And then we ended up filming it and doing all the posts and everything else after. Like, during all this. So
it was pretty much, like, written and filmed before pandemic, but then you realized you had to go back for reshoots, and then the pandemic hit?
Correct, yeah. It was pretty much that, yeah. So, you know, there was a couple of other things that we needed to shoot during the pandemic, but, yeah. So we had to do COVID filming, which is very different. So there was, like, a lot of safety protocols and stuff we had to do, even on an independent level, just because the restrictions that we have, you know, statewide, and for California, you know, they're pretty strict on that. So
did you, like, have to have a designated guy to constantly, you know, take temperatures as people came in on offset?
But yeah, we had to do that, and then
which is another person like, you need to pay, by the way.
exactly. Everybody gets paid, right? So yeah. So even with that, like on production, even just to get the cast food, you can't just like order pizza and like everybody take a slice. Like everybody needs their own individual meals. So if you decided to order pizza, you have to order a pizza for everybody and
like, you know, individual personal pizzas.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy. And out here in LA, as you know, there's a lot of vegans out here. So you have to really like the food budget was so expensive during COVID times than it was pre-COVID. It was nuts, but hey, we got to do what we got to do.
At the beginning of the pandemic, I filmed this thing. It was for stand-up for an app mm-hmm. called Laugh Lounge, where you can watch like live comedy on the app. And so they had me film it like in a studio, and they had to have a guy there. His job was to sanitize a microphone, like take a brand new microphone and, you know, put it in a Ziploc bag with my name taped to it, and was like standing there before you walk on and was like, this is yours. And then the other guy who comes off, he has to take his microphone with him. He has to sanitize that one. Like on the set that day for filming that was that guy's job. You know, it's just making sure that nobody's using someone else's microphone. it was a lot.
No, it's weird. So even doing rehearsals, you have to have the actors step 6 feet away just during rehearsals. Like they're doing they don't even have the right chemistry, man. Like it was so hard. Bring one actor in, you know, you do the positioning, like here's your marks. Now here's your mark. Now go practice like 10 feet away and yell at each other so we can get this right. Like it was crazy, man.
Just cheating angles and stuff.
Dude, well, eventually, you know, we were able to bring them in and do what we needed to, but like there was like the 15-minute rule, right? Like they can only be together for so long, so you have to hurry up and film it.
Gosh.
You know, have your take, separate, and it was nuts.
Damn, dude. that's crazy. I was going to ask you something else before we go. I'm sure you would have liked to, or maybe you did. Did it screen anywhere? Like, are you going to try to enter into festivals?
No. So for this one, we actually just dropped it. So, you know, when we actually filmed it, you know, we had some offers from some distributors, right? So, but based off of what we're trying to do, you know, from our business standpoint, we decided to drop it ourselves. We partnered up with some marketing companies. They're going to be doing the whole, you know, a marketing campaign and stuff for us. So, we're excited about that, but because of COVID on the set, we couldn't have a screening, man. We ended up doing like a soft screening when we did it online, but like, so we're able to like do like a Zoom call and stuff with everybody, but
that's not the same. Someone's better. So everyone's like watching a movie while they're on Zoom.
Man. Yeah, exactly. So like, so the whole time they could just be in shorts, their toes are just flicking, you know, sitting there watching, like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, you can't really like get in the zone and pay attention to a movie, you know, with your snacks and your drink while you're on Zoom. Yeah,
exactly, man. So, you know, whatever. We couldn't really have like an after party or anything like that. So, you know, we are planning to do it soon. We just haven't been able to do it yet. So.
Yeah, because I have a friend of mine that filmed her movie before the pandemic and, you know, entered it into a bunch of festivals, and it won almost every festival.
Nice.
Like it's in the horror category. She won like LA and Austin, Texas, like almost every single one, and was not able to go to one single screening of it, which like everything was online. Like just in, like, imagine that, dude. Like you worked so hard on this movie. It came out so good and you're winning festivals and you don't even get to watch it. And you don't even get to be given your award. Like you get an email and it's just like, you know, your Spectrum bill's due. You know what I mean? And then you know what I mean? A Groupon promotional thing. And then I won a festival. Congratulations. Okay. You know, and
please print out on your own printer.
And some of them, some of them were like, we'll mail you your trophy, but we got to charge you for the shipping. Dude, so that's a bummer. This is your first feature film, like a full-length feature film?
Yeah. So actually, right before this, I did a short film. It was, you know, pre-COVID, so we were able to do festivals.
That I remember you did the festival.
Award ceremonies. Yeah, exactly. So that one, you know, we actually won a lot of awards for. It was nice. So with this one, we want to do something a little different. So, you know, with festivals, I mean, by all means, for young independent filmmakers, I highly recommend it. For this one, we just had a different strategy with this one. So okay. We wanted to kind of go straight to the sources.
Well, it still would have been nice to see awesome, it, you know, a screening of it or something in the theater with, like, friends and family and stuff. But, you know, dude.
Yeah, of course.
As we, I mean, movie theaters are open now. And, I mean, you're only going to keep making, you know, bigger and better things. And what do you got? You got anything else in the work, bro? What's in the back of your brain right now, dude?
Oh man, dude, I have like a ton of projects and stuff I want to work on. So the next one up is a horror movie. So I have a good horror movie. I have a couple of graphic novels actually I want to start tackling into. So
yeah,
it's a lot, man. Like I want to do that. I have another comedy script I'm working on. So like I'm in the lab, man. I have a lot of stuff I'm working on. So I'm excited.
Nice, dude. Well, yeah, I'm excited for you, dude. And hopefully the next one we'll be able to all watch it in a theater somewhere.
exactly, man. Dude, I'll cast you in the next one, man.
Please do. I need more acting experience. And yeah, I know what you mean. I have so much stuff in my brain that I need to write. And I just don't have time because I'm always working on so many projects. It's like, dude, I have this podcast has 2 episodes a week. I'm constantly on the road lately, which is great. I'm so thankful for that. I'm getting way more stand-up gigs, but I created that other podcast called The Sitcomics for the table read for the sitcoms, but I haven't had a chance to. I wanted that to be out by the end of summer, so we'll see. I'm still trying to edit them, but at the same time, now I'm filming this documentary. I have 2 ideas for scripts that I've been wanting to start already, but it's like, you know, I feel you, dude.
Yeah, it's hard, man, especially when it comes to like screenwriting of movies. Like, it's not something that you can do for like a day or two, get back, come back in, you know, like a week or two later. It's something you really have to kind of binge do it. Otherwise, your train of thought is different. And the movies always, the script always comes out reading like that. At least in my experience, I'm not good enough to be able to step away for a couple of weeks, come back, and it sounds exactly the same. Because now the character thinks differently. The character talks differently. It's just, man.
And then your brain is constantly going creative mode, and then you might even be excited about something else while you're still working on that. And then the other character might sneak its personality. Dude, I don't know about you, but like, this is something, like, I either have 2 things. Nonstop ideas that come all at once, or writer's block. Nothing in between.
And that's one thing too that we didn't talk about with the pandemic is I get so much material out in the real world, right? Like you can be at a restaurant, you can hear something, and a lot of times either I hear somebody say something or I misheard it and I thought somebody said something and now my brain's racing with it. But during the pandemic, man, I have no exposure to any of that stuff. So like you know, it's just drying up the new material. It's like, man,
that's a big rule in stand-up comedy. They say that, you know, in order to entertain, you must first be entertained, which basically means reserve a couple of days to go out and enjoy, because you'll come up with ideas for being outside or watching movies or reading books, or you know, you get inspired. But like, I was still trying to write material during the pandemic, but it was all like, you know, so I ordered food jokes. The delivery guy.
Man, I got 15 pages of this?
Yeah. I do have like a solid 15-minute COVID stuff, but...
Because it's like, okay, everybody's going through COVID. The last thing, you know, everybody wants to escape this, so let me go ahead and make jokes about COVID and bring you right back into it.
All right, everybody, make sure you check out Dan's movie, which is called You're Hired, correct? I nailed it. Okay, it's called You're Hired. You can get it on, you can tell them where you can get it.
It's on iTunes, Google Play, it's on Amazon, and it's on Vudu.
You can rent it or you can buy it. Oh,
best part, exactly. It's only $4.99, cheaper than a cup of coffee, so we kept it
to buy cheaper it?
On purpose.
To buy it or to rent it?
To buy it. To rent it is like $3.99, I think, but $4.99 gets you the 4K coffee.
There you go, guys. Support up-and-coming artists. Support independent artists, which is something that I love to do, and that's a part of the reason that this documentary's message is so important to me. Like, no matter what happens to it, I just wanted to get the message out there. But support independent artists, so please do me a favor. Download his movie, and while you're at it, leave it a 5-star review. Now, in the event that you're absolutely broke, you're overdrawn, and the unemployment stopped, and you cannot spare $5, at least go to iTunes and give it a 5-star review, because you're supporting independent artists. All right, you guys? And if you only have $20 left, go to homeschoolpod.com. And I'll see you guys soon, Portland, Oregon, and Seattle. It's July 14th and 15th. Hurry up and get tickets. It's limited seating, so go to homeschoolpod.com and click on tour. I want to give a big thank you to Daniel DeSangre for calling in today, and big thank you to all of our listeners who continue to come back here and support the Homeschool Podcast as we document the journey. Don't forget that only love can save the world. I'm Augustino Zoido. We'll see you next time.
Homeschool Podcast.
Homeschool.
The Homeschool Podcast. Why? Because it was homeschool.
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
I don't want to do that at all.